Morning, everybody. Starting our share this morning, and we're going to continue. We started a little bit of a new section last week, and I'll just go back and what we said and go and continue. We say the Mishnah says, "Ein korim ve'ein poilin le'or haner b'Shabbos," which means we don't read nor do we pick out fleas from our lights from our clothing next to a light on Shabbos. The reason for that is when you do something which requires attention, requires concentration, you can be involved with what you're doing, and then inadvertently, without noticing it, you will go and adjust the fire. Remember that in those days, they used oil candles, and as the oil started burning out, the flame would get smaller, and the way to increase the flame was to tilt the lamp so that the oil went closer to the wick. But maybe you had a bigger fire. That way, you would increase the light and it would be easier for what you're doing. Since this is what we call a knee-jerk reaction, this is habitual, this is something that a person is very used to, Memela Chazal made a decree, made a gzera, that a person should not allow himself to do something which requires concentration next to a candle, because he will come to adjust the candle without even realizing it. We're not saying that we're worried about someone who is a rasha, someone who is a bad person, but rather, even a good person, this is something that you do when you are not paying attention. And therefore, we don't allow someone to sit and read next to a candle. There are exceptions to the rule. There's a whole Siman and Shulchan Aruch explaining all the exceptions. But basically, we're not going to go into them because today, Baruch Hashem, in most civilized countries, we have electricity. And therefore, we are not worried about sitting next to candles. I will mention just a couple of things just to understand it. We have, for example, that a wax candle, this then doesn't apply as it does by an oil candle. Because a wax candle, the flame is even. As the candle burns down, the wick goes with it. You always have a standard solid flame that comes from the wax candle. Therefore, there's no suspicion, there's no chashash that a person will come and adjust the candle. So only applies to oil candles. Second of all, if you do something to remind yourself that it's Shabbos, then we will also allow it. So, for example, if you put your candle into a glass box and then you want to read next to it, so we say such a person will remember, because if he goes to adjust the candle, it means he has to stop and he has to open the box. By that time, there's enough time that has gone through to get the thought process working. And whoops, I remember Shabbos. What we worried about is a automatic reaction that doesn't have two stages. When there's two stages, then a person remembers. So if you put some barrier between you and the candle, then that would help that you wouldn't come to fiddle with the candle. Another interesting exception to the rule would be what the halacha calls an adam choshu, an important person. And it's discussed, what does it mean, important person? And the conclusion is someone who due to his status that he holds himself, will not fiddle with a candle, because it is below his dignity. This has nothing to do with his status in society. It has to do with his status of how he holds himself. If he's the type of person that he has, servants on hand, and therefore if he's reading the paper and he wants more light, so he'll turn to his servants and say, "Will you please the light?" He will never reach out and fiddle the light. And therefore, on a person like that, he doesn't have this habitual, this automatic reaction, and therefore for him it's permitted to sit next to a light because he will never reach out. So what do we see from these exceptions to the rule is that we take the reasoning quite literally, and therefore we say if the reason doesn't apply, so then the rule doesn't apply again. So what's the rule? The rule is that you don't do something that requires concentration next to a candle, because we worried about an automatic reaction which would cause you to fiddle with the light before you become conscious of the fact that it is Shabbos. So, if you're in a situation where we know that such a habitual reaction will not take place, either because you are not such a person, or because the candle does not require such a thing, like we said, it's wax, then it wouldn't be a problem. Based on that, electric lighting, which is not our way to go and adjust it as needed, so then electric lighting would be permitted to use on Shabbos without a problem. So obviously you can't turn it on Shabbos, but if your light is on from before Shabbos, there's no problem to enjoy that light and do something that requires concentration, like reading or learning, something that is very engrossed, that a person gets very engrossed in, that is permitted for a person to do on Shabbos, because we're not worried that he's going to get up and do something. And if he does get up and do something, since this is not automatic, it's not habitual, so he will remember by the time he goes, once, say, the light bulb burns out, you say, well, maybe the light bulb will burn out and they go change it. That's not something you do automatically. That's something you think about before you do. And we say that he will become conscious of the fact that it is Shabbos and he will remember and he won't do it. Some say if you have...
What about pictures?
I was just about to get to that. Some say that when you have a rheostat on your, or a dimmer switch, as they call it, on your electric circuit, so you can change the strength of the light, then it should be avoided using such a thing, because there it is possible and it is made that you can adjust it. Therefore, it should be avoided to use such a thing. And if you need to, so then you should put something between you and the switch. So, for example, you buy a Shabbos cover and put it over the switch. That way, you will remember when you get to the switch, oh, it's Shabbos, and you won't come to adjust it. The Mishnah Berurah has a lengthy piece over here where he discusses in his day and age, they were still using candles, and he says that a lot of people were using lights on Shabbos, but they were putting signs up. They would put a sign up, or they would put it behind a box or something, behind a glass. He's not overly fond of such a solution, but he does say that one may rely on such a thing. And I would take it one step further, that a dimmer switch is not such a thing that we fiddle with all the time. Remember, a candle, by definition, an oil candle, as the oil recedes, the strength of the flame goes down. And therefore, it is built into the candle that eventually the flame will get lower and lower, and he's going to adjust it. This is something that happens all the time. Whereas an electric light, you set it to the strength that you want, and it stays that way. It doesn't get dimmer as time goes on. It doesn't get stronger as time goes on. It stays. And therefore, it's not something that you fiddle on, off, tilt this, tilt that, or get it right. So even though a dimmer switch you will adjust, but it's not so common that you just sit there with your hand on the dimmer switch and adjust it and always change it, because it's not a situation that changes. The light will stay the same strength all the time. Therefore, if you go and cover the switch, it would be placed to be lenient to rely on such a protection. It is recommended, stamazon, if you're going to be using electric light on Shabbos, that you should cover the switches, but that's just what we say, Eitzah Tova Kamash Malon, meaning that it is just a piece of good advice that your switches should be covered on Shabbos, and you shouldn't come to touch them, but as I said, it is unnecessary. Using electric lighting on Shabbos, the way we paskin, not a problem. Now, there's another halacha that has to do with candles, and that is, we know that on Shabbos we have a rule that's called a psikresha v'layonos. Let me explain. When a person does something, and there is a resultant action which is unneeded, and that's not the reason why he does it, if the resultant action is also on Shabbos, you cannot do the first thing. The example given in the halacha is you want a child to play with his head. Now, if you don't have a plain chicken's head, you can always take a chicken and cut the head off. And then you will have now a chicken head to go give to your child to play with. The problem is that when you remove the head from a chicken, the chicken tends to die. It's a natural thing that the chicken's going to die when you cut the head off. And if that's the and killing on Shabbos is forbidden, even if you're going to do it with a shechita, you're going to do it in the way of kosher slaughtering, nevertheless, it is also on Shabbos to kill a chicken. And therefore, even though you're only cutting the head off because you want the head, you're not interested in killing the chicken, but this is a direct result of your action, therefore we say it's psikresha v'layomos. Can you cut a head off and the chicken won't die? It's a rhetorical question, therefore we say it is also to do such a thing. We have many examples of such a thing. You wash your hands over your flower bed. You say, I'm only interested in washing my hands. I'm not interested in watering my flower bed. But we know the water's going to go in and water the flower bed. That is, again, a safe case of secretion. You open your fridge and the light goes on. I'm not interested in the light. I'm interested in taking out the milk. But the light went on. That is what happens. You open the door, the light goes on. Therefore, when you do one thing, even though your intention is not to do a forbidden melacha on Shabbos, nevertheless, when this happens, we say it will be forbidden. So, where does it leave us? What about a case where it's not for sure it's going to happen, but it's a very high chance? So we have another rule on Shabbos. It's called davar she'ein miskaven. I'm not intending on doing something. And we say that if there's a a certain amount of suffix of doubt whether this action will take place and is permissible. Example given in halacha is a person has a earth floor. He has a floor of earth, not paved, and he has a bench, and he wants to move the bench from one side of the house to the other, which is permitted on Shabbos. However, he can't carry the bench by himself and lift it up, it's too heavy, so he lifts one side and he drags it across the room. When you drag the bench, so the two legs that are still on the ground are going to create a groove across the floor. And that we say, making a groove on Shabbos is awesome. If you know that the bench is heavy enough and the earth on the floor is soft enough, there's going to be a groove, then it fits into the category of what we call a psik. But if you don't know, or it's not for sure, the consistency of the floor changes from where you are, and you don't know whether it's going to make a groove or not, so then you can pull, and if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. And even if you've walked across the room, and then you turn around, and you see you made a groove, you didn't do an Aveira, that wasn't wrong, because when you pulled it, you didn't know what was going to happen. There was a possibility it wasn't going to happen, therefore it's permitted to do. Once it's permitted to do, even if there's a result, it's not a problem to do on Shabbos. So that's what we call a Dovah Shemis Kaba. Now, we have a bit of a gray area, many places, and that is where it's almost sure it's going to happen, but it's not 100% sure. In such a case, we're still going to say it's not a Psik Reisha. But again, we want to avoid getting impatient. And Gemara uses a lashon of light alei Rav. Rav would curse someone who would do such a thing. A very interesting expression. We have it in a few cases that in order to strengthen the observance of a certain situation, which is not clearly forbidden, so Chachamim put a curse on someone who went and did it. So have a similar thing that if a person were to do melacha, not malacha, if a person were to do business and to make money, and he would go to work on a Friday afternoon, so Chazal say he will not see blessing from the produce of what he's done. We want a person to close shop early on Fridays and not work, and therefore be late for accepting Shabbos. We want him to stop early, and therefore it's not forbidden. You can work until the very last minute. But we don't want a person to do that, because if you let him work for the last minute, then when's he going to have his shower? When's he going to cook his food? And how's he going to keep Shabbos? Therefore, we tell him that a couple of hours before, he must stop working. Now, how do we enforce such a thing? So Chazal tell us that if you want to see blessing in your work, don't work on Friday afternoons, because that is a time that you will not get success from what you do. And even if you make that sale and you made a good profit on it, Chazal tell us you're going to lose somewhere else. And therefore, in the general picture of things, no gain is made from working late Friday afternoon. So again, it is not considered forbidden as a malacha of Shabbos. You're not going to hold that the person is considered a desecrator, a mahal of Shabbos. But rather, this is not what Chazal wanted to prepare for Shabbos by working late on a Friday afternoon. So we see there are cases where Chazal set up guidelines in order to keep us away from getting to things that are not worse. So when you have a case of a psik reisha, but it's not 100% clear it's a psik reisha. There are cases when they tell us not to do it because it's not doubtful enough to be considered a davar she'eino kavod. Back to our subject, what's it going to do with anything? If you have a candle in your room and the candle is near a door or a window, and were you to open the door or the window while the candle is burning, there's a very high chance of a regular wind coming in. I say regular wind because we're not worried about a hurricane coming. That is not something that a person has to be afraid of. That is not up to him. That's not something you take into account. We're talking about a regular wind, a regular breeze that blows on a regular day can come in and cause the candle to go out. If you have a candle next to a window, everybody knows you open the window, the candle goes out. Therefore, even though you're opening the window to get a bit of fresh air or to call your neighbor, or to call your kids in, as is common in this country, you stand at the window and you call out so that the whole street knows that you're calling your kids in for the meal. So, even though that's the purpose of opening the window, but if the candle goes out, that is going to be a psik reisha. But it's not 100% sure it's going to happen, because maybe at this moment there's no wind. And although 90% of the time there's wind, and when there's wind it will go out, maybe there won't be, and therefore it's not 100% sure it's going to happen. But since it's close enough, Chazal told us not to do it. Therefore, we say that halachically, one should not open a window or a door if you have a candle in close proximity that will be affected by the possibility of being blown out which was of the door that was opened or the window that was opened. Even if you've checked that there's no wind right now, you never know what can happen. Therefore, we still don't allow it. However, the other way around is actually permitted. If you have an open window and you have a candle near it, and the candle's flickering and flickering and flickering, and it hasn't gone out, and now you close the window, now the candle steadies itself, that is not considered as having made fire. Because we say that on Shabbos, the same way you may not make fire, may not extinguish fire. So maybe which also means the making of fire includes increasing a fire, an existing one, or decreasing an existing one is considered part of extinguishing. So if you have fire and you add fuel to it, you add wood onto the fire, that's also on Shabbos. Even though it's burning already, adding to it is also. Here, where you close the window and allow the candle to burn brighter, that is not considered as making fire on Shabbos, because all you're doing is you're removing a disturbance. You're not adding fuel, but you're removing a disturbance, and therefore we say that it's permitted to close a window or to close a door next to a candle. Now, if you have a candle that drips, it is dripping wax or dripping oil or dripping ash, and you want to put something underneath it to catch the drip, either because you want to catch it or because you want to protect what's underneath it. If you have your candle hanging over your table, it's dripping oil on your table, it's not going to be very pretty, so you put a bowl underneath to catch the oil. So you have to know that anything that drops off a candle is muktz. You may not move it on Shabbos, muktz or whatever drops off a candle, and therefore when that muktz falls into the bowl becomes muktz, and you cannot move the bowl on Shabbos. And that is a prohibition which we call mevato kli mehechonai, a utensil had free range of use when Shabbos came in. And as a result of something you've done, now you cannot use this kli on Shabbos. You cannot use this utensil. You have put it into a situation where I may not use it anymore. So this is a issur of mevato kli mehechonai. It is a rabbinical decree. And the question is, what's it based on? Some say it's a question of boinus, some sort of soiser. So the machlokas, how we denote it, how we define it, on what they base it. But let's just take it as fact. It's passed in the halacha that everybody holds that you may not do on Shabbos. And therefore, if you have a regular bowl that you're allowed to use, and you put it in a situation where the bowl gets filled up with something which is mukta, now the bowl can't be used. That's what the mevato kli mehechonai. Therefore, you may not put a bowl underneath a dripping candle where there's oil going to drip inside or wax going to drip inside, because the oil and the wax are mukta, and they will then cause it that you cannot move the bowl. If you put something in the bowl beforehand, so now the bowl becomes a kli that has a davar muta v'ha davar also two things inside it, so then you can still move it because of the muta object inside. So you put, say, a book, you put a piece of food, something like that, inside the bowl, and then wax drips next to it, also in the bowl can be moved, and then you may do, if it's to catch some ash that's falling from the candle, so then we say that nitza it's enboy mamish, ash is considered as insignificant, and therefore it is not enough to consider as having matter, and therefore causing the bowl to become mukta, and therefore there's no problem to catch the ash. The problem is that you must not put water in the bowl, because if the ash is still burning, when it falls, then it will land in the water and go out. Now, would have, and that is considered as kibbuy, that would be causing the ash to be extinguished as a result of something that I did by putting water underneath it, and that would be forbidden on Shabbos.
If the food was on the plate, would that make now the plate?
If the food becomes inedible, then yes, the food becomes mukta. That is, like we have a case of when you eat a fruit and you leave behind the peels are no longer edible, so that becomes mukta. But this halacha of mevato kli mehechonai also takes into account, do I have a way of removing the mukta? When I have a bowl with oil inside, I can't just spill the oil out, because then I'm pouring it onto the table, and that's not something I want to do, and therefore I'm stuck with the oil inside it. But when I have a plate with peels, I can do what's called tilthu min hatzad. I can carry the plate without touching the peels, and then throw the peels into the rubbish box, into the garbage. And that way, the plate will now be rid of the mukta on it, and therefore there's no problem with mevato kli mehechonai. So if the oil spills on the food, and the food as a result becomes inedible, and therefore it is mukta, it's not for sure that it's going to be in the category of mevato kli mehechonai, because I can get rid of that. I can find a way to get the food off the plate, and therefore the plate can be used again. So even if I don't actually do it, but the fact that I can means that I haven't totally, so to speak, destroyed the keli, that I've taken it out of use for Shabbos.
If one knows that it's actually going to happen and ruins, and then it's a tashvis.
That would be a problem. That would be a problem. It's about tashvis. Tashvis, any food that could be used for human consumption and you find a different use for it, it's problematic. Unless the other use is of greater value than the food use, it's usually not the case. To take a edible food and use it as a sponge is usually, so you have a use out of it, but that's not what edible food is made for, actually eating. A lamp, an electric lamp, any other lamp, is mukzeh because it has a light burning on it and therefore cannot be moved on Shabbos. And we say that a lamp includes the lampshade. What is all part of the lamp, bottle to the lamp becomes all part of it, and therefore every part of the lamp is considered mukzeh and cannot be moved on Shabbos. But if you have a sort of shade that you have attached to the lamp for the purpose of covering the light or uncovering the light so that you then use it on Shabbos, that is the way that a Shabbos lamp is designed, is that the light is inside a box. You have a shutter that you will close or open and allow the light to come out or block the light. So that shutter was built with the idea that it is made to cover the light. So then it doesn't become bottle to the lamp because I set it up on Erev Shabbos. Before Shabbos already, I set it up that I need to use it to open and close on Shabbos, and therefore it is permitted to use a Shabbos lamp which has a shutter and open and close the shutter on Shabbos. Even though generally speaking, we say all parts of a lamp are considered as mukzeh. In this case, where it was made specifically, it is not. A couple of halachas that actually are not so Shabbos related, but more Yom Tov related, is to melt wax to make it soft is also on Shabbos, and therefore if you need to prepare a candle which you're allowed to light on Yom Tov but not on Shabbos, so you cannot warm up the bottom of the wax candle and fit it into the candlestick on Yom Tov because one may not melt the wax on Yom Tov. So you just, if you have like for 2 days Yom Tov, if you haven't prepared the candles in advance, on the second night candles and put them in the candlestick without preheating underneath. An interesting halacha I saw, I actually want to try it this coming week. There are Shabbos candles, you can see them behind me. This is a glass cup where you put a candle inside, and the candle has a wick. The wick is attached at the bottom with a metal disc. And what happens is, as the candle burns, the fuel turns into a liquid, and it all burns out. When you're finished, you're left with a small residue of wax on the inside. I've taken it out already, but there was a little disc on the inside that gets stuck at the bottom. And apparently, I know if it writes, if you put a little bit of water in before Shabbos, that disc will not stick to the bottom. And I thought about it, it makes a lot of sense, because water is more dense than the fuel that you use, which is like an oil, it's a paraffin. And therefore, as it melts, the liquid will float on top of the water, and then the little disc will have nothing that will hold it down at the bottom. It will float up as well. And Mamela, when the candle goes out at the end on Friday night, that little disc will not stick to the bottom of the cup. And when you prepare it for the next one, it's easy to get out. I always, Motzei Shabbos on Friday, I have to scratch out the cup to get out that little metal piece in order to put the fresh one in. So he says that you're allowed to put water into the candle in order that this shouldn't happen. Now, what's the chiddush is it usually, first of all, you can only do it on Erev Shabbos. You can't add the water on Shabbos already. It has to be done before you light candles. But you, generally speaking, one has to be careful that when you place a candle in water and you cause it to go out, the question is what type of situation you're setting up that you're causing a candle to go out. So let's just say this way without getting too complicated sugya. But if you set it up this way in advance, it is permissible to put water inside beforehand to stop it from sticking. I like the idea so much, I feel it'll try it.
We actually use olive oil to help. Somehow it also, if